Je passe la parole à Jean-Michel Frodon, qui était dans les conceptions de cet projet des Collèges de France. Et on va commencer avec Ashish, qui va nous parler du cinéma indien, et Wale, et Richard Peña, et mais je ne vais pas bouffer ton temps, me dire Jean-Michel. Alors, à toi.
Merci Amos, bonjour à vous tous d'être là, merci de votre présence. Pour la dernière partie, la dernière demi-journée de ces deux jours au Collège de France, nous avons souhaité avec Amos inscrire cet ensemble de réflexions autour du cinéma et en particulier des enjeux d'archives et d'histoire qui ont été traversés et éclairés de tant de façons enrichissantes depuis hier matin, de l'inscrire dans des éclairages concernant des grandes cinématographies mondiales et plus particulièrement des grands cinéastes ou des grands auteurs dans un certain nombre de cas, au milieu de quoi j'aurai la tâche un peu compliquée de réintroduire le cinéma d'Amos comme faisant évidemment partie de ces problématiques et étant à la fois enrichi et inscrit dans le contexte que vont partager avec nous des très bons connaisseurs de ces différents domaines. Je les présenterai au fur et à mesure qu'ils prendront la parole. Les deux premières interventions, comme j'espère vous en avez été prévenus, seront en anglais. Et les personnes qui ont des difficultés avec cette langue peuvent se procurer un casque pour la traduction. My dear colleagues, we are pretty late. So I have to ask you to be pretty strict on the duration of any of your speech, because we are already way behind schedule, but hopefully we're not going to get worse. Nous allons donc commencer immédiatement avec Ashish Radiash Shah, qui est un historien du cinéma, qui est professeur, qui est organisateur de festivals et d'expositions, qui est l'auteur de nombreux ouvrages sur le cinéma indien, qui est basé à Bangalore, mais qui a aussi intervenu à Séoul, à Hong Kong, à New York, et dans beaucoup de parties du monde. On lui doit un ensemble d'ouvrages concernant le cinéma indien tout à fait important, dont l'un, Encyclopedia of Indian Cinema, qu'il a coécrit avec Paul Willeman. Paul Willeman qui est lié à l'histoire d'Amos, puisqu'il fait partie des grands critiques et penseurs du cinéma qui ont été parmi les tout premiers à identifier l'importance du cinéma d'Amos Gitai dès Eight House, le film dont on a déjà bien parlé ce matin, auquel il avait consacré un travail et une réflexion tout à fait riche d'anticipation sur l'importance de ce qui était en train de naître sous le nom du cinéaste Amos Gitai au début des années 80. Et donc c'est aussi, je crois, une des bonnes raisons d'Ashish parmi nous, qui va parler en particulier d'une immense figure du cinéma indien, mais du cinéma mondial, qui est Ritvik Ghatak. Ashish.
Thank you very much, Jean-Michel, and thank you to everybody. I believe I'm the reason for a major technological intervention this afternoon, various devices. Here I am. Jean-Michel, I'll take 30 minutes, right? That's my schedule. And I have a 9-minute clip to show, so I'll try and end my presentation inside
of... what must be done. We trust you.
Yes, inside of 20 minutes. So that's the plan. There's a little bit of autobiography involved here, involving Amos Gitai and our first meetings. We first met, in fact, in Paris, when Amos showed me this film that he had made at that time called Ananas. I didn't know very much about his cinema at the time, and the only thing that of interest was that my native language of Marathi describes pineapple as ananas. That is the name of the word pineapple in my language of Marathi. So that is what got me started. But there was something else that got me really interested, and that was that a person whom I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about, a mutual friend, Paul Willimon, probably familiar to many of you here, was something, he had become something of a key figure in my life, and he was the person who told me to meet Amos Githai and to see Pineapple, because it seemed to Willimon at the time that that particular film was causing a major development in a theory that Willimon was building in those days. This was 1984, when Pineapple, I think, had just been made. But that was an important year because the third cinema conference had taken place in Edinburgh, and Paul Willimon had co-organized that conference with Jim Pines. And in fact, I spoke on Ritvik Ghatak at that time as well. Willimon, in those days, was thinking about the third cinema and thinking about how a filmmaker like Githai and a film like Pineapple would so significantly develop a theory that even until then was primarily connected with Latin America. Mostly the third cinema was seen to be Latin American film. By expanding that concept to include cinemas of resistance and protest inside Europe, even more particularly inside Britain, talking to various kinds of formations that were developing globally. This was some kind of project that he was interested in developing. And I'm going to say a little bit about that because it does seem, as we expand this entire panel to include Latin American film, Black African film, and other such traditions, to speak of a particular, this is interesting, I think, methodology that Willimon had defined at that point of time on how what he subsequently would call comparative film studies would develop. I mean, what comparative film studies had come to mean. Until then, and perhaps even since then, our familiarity with each other's cultures exists, I guess, primarily through a kind of area studies model where we become experts in some language, civilization, or culture other than our own, or through some idea of cultural exchange. You know, your culture. My culture is a sealed culture. I come here representing my civilization, so to say, and you represent yours. And when you and I talk, it is as though our civilizations are in conversation, something like that. And there would be certain sorts of, you might say, national exchange programs which facilitate that kind of cultural exchange, which Willimon was profoundly against. He developed a major critique of that, and from that context also a critique of film festivals and other such occasions that allow for that kind of cultural exchange. Instead of that, he presented what seems to me to be a methodology by which comparative cultural projects can be developed by assembling together filmmakers who did not have any either obviously political or formal connection with each other. Very difficult to look at them as linked to each other. And later on in my presentation, I will speak of the startling consequences of Willimon putting Githai's cinema along with that of Ritvik Ghatak. Not a filmmaker that you would think of firsthand as having any resemblance to Willimon. In order to make that kind of set of clusters take place across civilizations, across cultural practices, Willimon developed at that time what he described as sort of cinematic family resemblances. This is his phrase, family resemblances that occur at important level. He speaks of other ways of existing, why film narratives exist, other ways of existing and negotiating of processes of historical / geographical transformation. Such transformation he defines in a very particular manner, and I think this is of interest when you start looking at the films he's talking about, Pineapple at that time being the most important, but subsequently in probably one of the maybe even now, I don't know, one of the best known essays, at least in the English-speaking world, on Githai's cinema is Willimon's essay on the editing of Berlin-Jerusalem and Bangkok-Bahrain. You know, it's a particular argument that he makes, and I'll come to that argument in just a minute. Willimon speaks of him as a project that focuses on commonalities as well as differences within a shared encounter within the transformative dynamics generated by the processes of capital accumulation. Now, he then makes a link between the processes of capital accumulation on the one hand and narrative processes on the other. This is what gets him started in terms of family resemblance. And you can see now why Pineapple became such an important film for that kind of thinking. Such a shared encounter, he says, perhaps produces the only really positive consequence of globalization. What cultural critics have to say about their frame can now become directly relevant to other people working in other geopolitical frames. He wants now to ask, he says, he doesn't want to ask the question of cinema historically, but he wants to ask, and I think this happened this morning in the way that history was spoken about in relation to Geeta's work, he wants to ask the question of history cinematically. So in what way would be a cinematic understanding of history rather than a historical understanding of cinema would be the way he wants to take this forward. And in the process of doing that, he puts together a set of practices which may resemble translation, you know, the way that, you know, a cinema translates into another cinema, or a way of understanding it translates into other forms of intelligibility, but actually relates much more to various forms of cross-cultural exchange related to economic practices, you know, capitalist practices. A kind of a demystifying mechanism by which the cinema could actually define itself in relation to, again I quote him, an immanent viewer location. So there is a particular way by which a particular sort of cinema invents a particular viewer, and it is the way that it engages with that that makes it available for being understood outside of that immediate exchange. It's a slightly complicated idea, I think, even now for film studies to comprehend. But there are these kind of now methodologies that he will provide by which this can happen. Three of them. I'll just read this particular, just a paragraph which I'll read. It's a little too complicated for me to work with spontaneously. Three attributes. One is what he calls inner speech. It's a phrase that he uses, inner speech. The second is the phrase cinephilia, which is probably more familiar to us, this. And the third is a concept that he will now call the fourth look. Willimon explores how the cinema can dramatize the very process of modernization, as the differential encounters with capitalism. Three of the cinema's most important properties have been, he suggests, the capacity to address inner speech, which is actually a kind of an interior universe of a film. It's a kind of something that's inside the film, something that it is trying to say, but which is not necessarily available if you reduce a film to only its surface meaning of plot, what it is ostensibly saying, because actually the film is saying a great deal more. It is saying something far more complicated than what it apparently allows you to understand. When you go in there, you figure out the inner speech, you can make some other sense of it. The second, the cinephilia, and the third, the fourth look, all three concepts, he says, are innate to the cinema. They are basic to cinema, that is to say to all celluloid film, where filmmakers who are conscious of this fact, whether they're conscious of this fact or not, actually work whenever they are taking a shot within a fiercely fought sort of tension that exists over every frame of every film that has ever been made. Now this is a drastic proposition. This is like practically any film actually reveals that tension almost autonomously of the filmmaker's intentions once you get into what that film is really doing, the work that the particular film is doing. All of these formulations, inner speech, cinephilia, and the fourth look, demonstrate a tussle of some sort, a relentless war of attrition going on whenever a shot is taken in a celluloid film. Now, this is him speaking. Huh? That whenever a shot is taken, when a filmmaker says, start camera, to the point where he says cut, some kind of a tension now exists in the entire process of taking that particular shot. Contrary to what they might appear to be doing, filmed images in fact typically offer a clear disjuncture between an outer mechanical frame and a more engaged inner frame, a kind of an interior frame, a frame of attention, which works like an essential subset of a larger, elusive picture the normative demarcation of the viewer's gaze. So if you like, there is a kind of a big picture, and there is a viewer who's an imagined viewer who's looking at the big picture, let us say an Israeli viewer of a Gitai film, you have something else inside it, you know, some sort of a, it's like a film within a film, which creates a viewer within a viewer, which allows you to make another kind of capacity of meaning, which can, he says, travel across cultures. Now, this is the broad, I mean, as quickly as I could put together a life's body of work into 10 minutes, this is broadly the kind of armature with which he would speak. He would now start making connections between the Indian filmmaker Ritvik Ghatak, the Brazilian filmmaker Nelson Pereira dos Santos, or Glauber Rocha. He would start talking about Hu Xiaoxian. He would start talking about, Wong Kar-wai, and other such filmmakers, and put them together in various and interesting combinations, which completely defeat any kind of cultural purpose, any kind of sense of where these filmmakers might come from. And you would say that it's because they're filmmakers that you're allowed to do this. And I'm not terribly sure that comparative film studies in this sense has actually been picked up, whether we're still sort of a little bit stuck within an earlier cultural exchange paradigm. And it's from here that he will now move to Gitai. Yeah? Amos Gitai's films, says Paul Willimon, show that it is most decidedly not through the point of view shots that we spectators are mobilized, but through the differences between, for example, one point of view and another, even within a shot. And I think, you know, you'd have seen this in the clips that we saw, especially yesterday, of how actually points of view will change within single shots. This dialogue with the viewer, he says, is to be traced in this pattern of differences. And I think yesterday we spoke a little bit, you spoke a little bit about juxtaposition. And juxtapositions then will become quite an interesting thing here, an interesting phenomenon here. In the shifts between markers, such as a point of view manifested in the body of the text. So a text has a point of view, that point of view has a body, that body in turn has a particular sort of a shot-making structure, and then there is that internal struggle. This is where we learn who the filmmaker thinks he or she is talking to, or he or what he or she thinks we know or are interested in. So this is not editing in the sense of montage, and in fact, it's of interest, and we have Mr. Eisenstein himself here today, that Willimon actually had problems with Eisenstein's theory of montage. He actually considered it, especially as he received it, misleading and maybe even problematic. He wanted to think of another form of, let's say, symbolic clashes that take place rather than more conventionally understood editing sort of apparatuses. And this is what I think will show a filmmaker like Ghatak as having any resemblance to Willimon. Of considerable interest here, however, is the next step, which is the way that he suddenly ups the ante to make all of these debates not arcane debates within filmmaking and so on, but actually political debates that in fact define complex phenomena such as national formations. I mean, he will do that. I mean, he will make that link. He says, the relevance of the film, Gitai's film, to the current political issues cannot be underestimated. It is the most explicit cinematic statement to date, he's talking about Berlin, Jerusalem, of a position which receives all too little exposure in cinema by showing the ideological as well as the experiential that were and are active in the formation of the Israeli state. This is Willimon speaking. And so you know, the jump is quite startling. Gitai points to the possibility and indeed necessity of a different state formation adjusting to a more realistically to the actual needs and conditions prevalent in the area. The film is a contribution to the growing debate about what the options in fact are. And so I called my presentation Options in that particular sense. Now comes the final point I wanted to make, which was what got me implicated in this. This presentation now makes Willimon speak of two Indian filmmakers who, says Willimon, do the same thing as what Gitai is doing. One of them is the filmmaker Ritvik Ghatak, and the other is the filmmaker Kumar Shahani. Now, neither Ghatak nor Shahani have heard of Willimon, Gitai, nor would Gitai at that time probably have heard of either of these filmmakers in the early 1980s, and yet there is that extraordinary connection that takes place. And I want to now use this not so much to understand Gitai, but to try and use, let's say, a Gitai theory of cinema that Willimon explores to understand a filmmaker that comes from where I come from, which is India. For me to try and understand an Indian filmmaker using this detour is actually what I'm trying to do here. And so on to Ritvik Ghatak, the filmmaker whom I'm going to be speaking about a little bit. Ghatak, interestingly, is actually also from an extremely troubled state structure. He is from what would come to then be Bangladesh, but it wasn't Bangladesh at the time when he was born, and he had moved to Calcutta back in the 1940s. And in the late 1940s, of course, we have partition, and India and Bangladesh, at that time East Pakistan, become two separate countries. Yeah? This particular problem that occurs when countries split up into two zones leads to consequences which apparently may have made Willimon think of Ghatak when speaking of Gitai, which is actually the manner in which these kinds of fissured spaces, these spaces of division that take place, actually translate into subjective conditions, you know, where individuals act out this kind of split that takes place, which is supposedly a political split, but may in fact have a consequence that far from conventionally political. And so I want to now show you something like eight minutes of a very, very famous sequence from a film called Komal Gandhar, made in 1961. Komal Gandhar is a note on the Indian musical scale. It has been, I think, poorly translated as E flat, which is precisely misleading rather. So what's happened here is this, that this is set in the Calcutta of its time, and it's to do with radical theater groups. And in fact, we have had in India, in 1943, the famine occurred. This was during the war. And the famine led to 5 million people dying of hunger, one of the most important political instances in the subcontinent at that point of time, because it occurred not because there was shortage of food, but because of war profiteering. And you had a situation after that that led to radical theater practices emerging, and you know, Ghatak then would come, he would join the Communist Party and would become part of the Indian People's Theater Association, which is the referent of the radical theater movement there. Inside the film, what happens is that there are two theater groups who are in some ways rivals of each other, partly because although they're radical and although they have no supposedly support for the partition of India, one happens to come from formerly Bangladesh and the other happens to come from what is India. So there is a peculiar form of ethnic division that takes place, which leads to internal rivalries and tensions and these fissures that occur. You have a situation where the heroine who's part of one theater group and the hero who's part of another have a peculiar kind of an attraction, but then they have to work it all out within the context of this kind of larger history. In the sequence that I'm going to show you, what happens is that I'll just say a little bit about this. Can we have the So what happens in the film is that the theater groups get together and they go to a place called Lal Gola. It's important because that place happens to be right near the Padma River, and the Padma River is the river that is more or less the river that divides India and Bangladesh. So, you know, you can actually see the national border that takes place. This is actually an extremely, it's now completely, there are these barricades that exist on this particular national border. But what happens is this theater group arrives there, and then they are in their radical, so to say, moment, and they're singing a lot of songs that are extremely famous in the theater groups of the time, and you will now see what happens.